friends, welcome. This is the Man Overseas Podcast. I'm glad you're joining me. I'm coming to you from overseas, true to the name. And if you care to guess where I am, I'll give you a few hints. This is arguably the digital nomad capital of the world. Every time you go to a coffee shop, you see people working. They have lots of co-working spaces here. So like WeWork, you know, WeWork is the IPO from a few months ago where the founder was offered $1.7 billion to step down as chairman of the board, which is just nuts. Anyway, we met a couple last week that go to a co-working space every day, well, at least Monday through Friday, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and they treat it like any other job. Then at night, and this will probably give away where I am, at night, people fill the karaoke bars and pubs, and they're looking for cheap beer and flashing lights and maybe ladyboys. Who knows? Now, when I say ladyboys, that probably gives it away. I'm not in Bangkok. I am in Chiang Mai. My guest on the podcast is living in Chiang Mai. He works at a Starbucks, not as a barista, but when I walk in there to get coffee, I see him every time I'm in there. He has two monitors set up, and so he uses Starbucks as his co-working space. Frank Decker is a software architect who has no plans to move back to the States, and since his job enables him to work from anywhere in the world, that's what he's going to do. He's never going back. We talk about family, love, finances, and what it's like living in Thailand as a Westerner. Very cool story. With that, let me welcome Frank Decker. Frank, welcome to the Man Overseas Podcast.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, man. You know, in June of last year, there were 12 boys who played on a soccer team together and with their coach went exploring a cave in Chiang Rai, which that's in northern Thailand, right? Is that close to here?
It's in Maesai.
Okay. How far is that from here?
It's about maybe a 4-hour drive.
Okay. And the kids ended up getting trapped with their coach deep inside the cave underneath a mountain. And it was a pretty dramatic rescue that captivated the world because I remember seeing it on televisions and airports. It was all over CNN. I mean, it was really an international story.
Yes.
And from what I remember, this cave went under like 16 feet of water. There were parts of it that flood between November and April, so you can't go in the cave at all. Yeah. But what happened was heavy rainfall, and the kids had no choice but to go deeper into the cave and eventually settled on a small rocky shelf that was a few miles from the cave entrance, which they were actually past a place that was normally a dry point, and they were in total darkness and lost all sense of time.
Yeah.
But that was a big deal around here, right?
Yeah. Big deal.
What? That was only a year ago. So was it a big deal?
It was a big deal. It was on the news and everyone was watching it. You know, in Thailand, they have something called Taiwanness, where they all care about one another, especially when it becomes on a massive scale. You know, people, they sometimes, you know, people come out to be a little bit not so friendly or not so kind. But in general, when there's a need, the Thai people are there to, it's part of their culture to be there for one another. So when this thing happened, actually, because my friend also lives in Maesai, and he does a youth group like organization there, so his heart is like very much tied toward this situation, because he also like has his sons who play soccer and what you call football in Thailand. He's very involved in the community, so it's a big deal. And actually, Chiang Mai is a smaller place. Maesai is a smaller place. So people are a little bit closer together to see each other more often. Yeah, it was a big deal. Everybody was on edge. Because one of the problems is that, you remember there was a situation, I think it was in South America or something like that, where the kids were stuck in a...
It was miners, wasn't it?
In a miners, miners. And everybody got together. I mean, you're talking about 8 lives, you know. So, and there were children. So, you know, when you think about children, you got children. If you have children, I have children, you know, you begin to feel for someone else's children. It becomes like an automatic response. What if that was my child, you know? Mm-hmm. What if my child was on the soccer team and they didn't tell me that they were going to go take a, you know, bicycle ride and go to the mountains and say, hey, let's go inside the cave, you know? And, you know, I think that that situation teaches a lot about many things, you know? First of all, you can't predict the weather, right? If something is going to happen, you can't always be prepared. And so I think that for me, it was a big surprise that the children got stuck in that cave. And when I think about caves, you know, you think you've been in a cave, a tavern or something. I never would even imagine that much water could fill up in a cave, in a mountain, you know. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it happened. The biggest part of the whole thing was not that the children were stuck in the cave, that people cared for them, and that their whole goal was to rescue them. So when you look at people and living their own lives and their own way of doing things, but they come together when something like this happens. So this is touching. So we also have to be thankful that the Thai military that was involved with this rescue, they lost one. It was a huge, huge task, and very complicated one.
I'm just thinking about the kids. I'm sure they felt fear and maybe even terror, but they were determined to survive. I remember reading that they dug deeper into the shelf so that they could create a cavern where they could huddle together and keep warm, but they didn't have any food, and their coach was a former monk. Mm. And taught the boys meditation techniques, right, which I found fascinating. So they were able to, the coach was able to help them stay calm and use as little air as possible, and then would tell them to lie still so that they could conserve their strength. Alluding to what you said, the Thai people lost a Navy SEAL. He lost consciousness as part of a routine delivery to deliver air tanks to the kids. So it was a really, really sad story. And I know that rescue teams were brought in from all over the world. And after 10 days, there was a Navy SEAL from the UK who found the kids. And I guess he was wearing a GoPro on his mm-hmm. helmet, because you can view online the moment where he rescued those kids. Mm. And when he found them, they were very thin. And the first thing they said was that they were hungry. Mm. And it's tough to watch, man. It's pretty powerful. But, yeah, I just wanted to ask about it because I know it was a big thing around here that impacted the community. There's so many reasons to love Thailand, and one of them is the people. I have not met more, and I've been a lot of almost 60 countries now, and I haven't met more sincere, more genuine people, especially their gratitude. Like, they're so grateful when you do something for them, and the way they put their hands together in that prayer motion and just bow their head and say thank you. It's just a really sincere thing. We could learn a lot from them. How did you end up here in Thailand?
Well, I never planned on coming to Thailand. I was very much in my career doing software development for an insurance company. And just like anybody else, you know, you want to find that other person in your life, you know, that makes you complete, or hope to make you complete. So, I have another friend that was on Facebook. We were connected through Facebook, and I was just browsing through her friend's profile, and I saw a picture of my beautiful wife at the beach, smiling with the sun shining in her hair, and a nice, you know, peach blouse. And I was like, wow, she's pretty. But, you know, at the time, she was not available, so I'm not a person to pry in other people's territory. So, but a year later, not a year, a couple of years later, she was just online, and she said some kind of, like, moan in a text, you know, on her status. And I said, what's going on, you know? And then found out, you know, it was actually 3 a.m. in the morning, her time. So it was an interesting communication. It was a very quick communication.
So she complained about her relationship status? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. And you said, hey, girl, what's up?
Yeah.
And then so you started
my
communicating.
Turn. Yeah. I mean, you guys got to know, you know,
when to pounce.
Wait, they lose, man.
Yeah, that window of opportunity is small sometimes.
Sure, you could probably miss like 1,000 times, but if you don't jump for it, you never get it. So
I can totally relate to that story. So how long did it take for you to come here and meet her after that?
It was actually very quick. We talked. First time we talked, she said, can I talk to you tomorrow? And here's the funny thing. She accidentally sent me an emoji kiss that she did not intend to do the night that I first talked with her.
You believe her?
Yeah, I do, because it doesn't make sense, because we didn't talk much, you know? But I was like, that's interesting. So, but, you know, women are usually the more critical thinkers, and men are, you know, more like, shoot, from our head kind of thing. the women are more like, I don't know. Let me check this guy's background first, right? But so we started talking on Skype the next day, and then we talked about like her life and my life a little bit, and there's kind of some similarities there. So kind of we had an instant connection, you know. And then also I studied Asian culture, and I also studied Chinese and Cantonese and Japanese and Korean. So, you know, I had some understanding of Asian cultures. Not as much as I should have, I guess, coming to Thailand, you know. It's a big change. But, we talked for like a month, and then I'm like, well, are you open to get married with someone? She's like, yes. So at that point, you know, we started talking about the more details. And then I went down to the jewelry shop and started checking out diamond rings. I asked her for her size of her finger.
You hadn't met her yet.
I hadn't met her yet. But she's part of our church group, so that made a little bit, you know, like, not such a fear, you know.
Is this Buddhism?
No, Christianity.
Christian, okay. Yeah.
So, I wanted to, like, hey, we should get married. And then she's like, her elderly people take care of her, you know. They suggested that we meet first. And so I worked at a company, we were very busy, always, you know, always making changes, always, you know, the boss worried about this, worried about that. So it's very shaky, you know, ground sometimes. So I wanted to go and take a vacation and go see her. And I'm like, how am I going to get my boss to say yes to this?
And where are you living at the time?
Fullerton, California.
Okay.
So he said, sure. I'm like, what? So I got the ring, flew to Bangkok.
How excited are you on the flight over?
Nervous. Because I have no idea. I had been to Japan before, so I knew, like, a little about Asian, you know. And so and that was kind of an interesting experience there.
Had you FaceTimed with her or done any kind of video conferencing?
Yes, of course. Okay. This was Skype video.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you did that with her for about a month before you bought the ring.
Yeah.
Can I ask how much you spent on the ring?
Not as much as I should have. I don't know, maybe about $1,400 US dollars.
That's a lot in Thailand.
Yeah, it's a lot here. I flew to Bangkok, and then when I came off the plane, it was really hot. That's the first thing I knew. Man, it's hot. Like, I've never been in a country that's hot. And, like, in the airport, I feel like we turned off the aircon and they closed up the windows. And like,
what year is this?
This is when I met her, it was 2014.
Okay. And at that time, you were how old?
41.
41. And you had never been married before?
No.
Okay.
I've had girlfriends.
Yeah. Well, I married late in life, too. I didn't marry until I was 38. So.
Yeah, I think at first, you know, when you before you get married or before you think about marriage, you know, you're not always so serious about life, you know, and so you just, when you get married, it's not a small thing. Like, some people say, oh, I just got married, you know, on the spur of the moment, but it's usually not a small thing, you know. It's a lot of responsibility, it's a lot of changes, and especially if you marry someone that's different culture, different languages, you know, different way of thinking, you know. It's like, man, what if I got myself into it, right?
Her English was good?
Yeah. She
excellent.
She was studying at an English university in Bangkok, so ABAC University. So okay.
So you're 41 years old.
Yep.
It's 2014.
Yep.
And you fly to Bangkok.
Yep.
You have the ring in your pocket.
In my bag, but sure.
You're very nervous. What happens next?
Some tall girl came run up to find me because my wife's kind of short. You know, especially back then because she was, you know, not having a baby yet, you know.
How old is she?
How old is she now or was?
Either one. I can do the math quickly.
Well, forgive me for saying your age, dear. she's almost 35.
Okay.
So we're 10 years apart.
Okay.
There's the and the button. she was very excited. She got me a little small seafood, like, sandwich thing to give me when she greeted me. Does she consider if I'm hungry or not? Which is kind of nice, you know?
That is nice.
I probably wasn't thinking about how she was so considerate when she gave me the sandwich, but later as I think about it, I realized that she was very considerate.
Hug, big kiss? What was the embrace?
Not a kiss.
Not a kiss. Big hug.
Okay. Yeah. I think Thai culture is not kissing in public anyways, but in general, they're more conservative. So, and then we just left together. A lot of that stuff was a little blur, you know, because it was an exciting moment. A lot was happening, coming left and right at me, being that I am, you know, Farang, as they call us, right? Farang means a white foreigner.
Oh.
It's actually the same sound of the green fruit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The
fruit you drink out of?
Guava.
Oh, that's guava. Okay.
It's called Farang.
Oh, okay, guava is
in Thai, yeah. So just in case, you know, like when you go to a small community and you see a bunch of Thai kids going, Farang, 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 you can say, Dengmo, 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 back to them. That means watermelon. So it may cause them to laugh a little bit. But it will break the ice if you're nervous. So we met in Bangkok, and then we stayed in a nice place, actually. So like a castle. It's called the castle. It's like this big mansion, like way out near ABAC University in Bangkok. And we stayed there a couple of nights, and then we took a bus, and we went down to Chiang Mai.
No intimacy problems the first night? No awkwardness? No. Just pure excitement?
Yeah.
Mm. Did she look as good as you expected?
Yeah, she was a pretty girl. She's a pretty girl. She's quiet. Mm-hmm. She was quiet, you know. Not so quiet now.
But, now that she's comfortable with you.
Yeah, she was quiet. We came here. We meet her friends, part of her, the people she grew up with. It was like a foundation that she was part of. Then we met her mother.
How was that?
That was interesting. She said, thank you for marrying my daughter, meeting my daughter, you know. And
oh, so you had already popped the question at the castle?
I popped the question at the little hotel we were staying at in Chiang Mai before we met her mother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, actually, you know, I might have it mixed up, you know. I just remember saying, can I marry your daughter? I think I asked her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in Thailand, they have this culture where when you marry the daughter, you have to pay a fee.
A dowry
to the parents.
Mm.
And that's only for a man. The man marrying the woman, you have to pay a dowry. I think in other countries, the woman actually pays the man's family. Called sinsod.
Here it's called sinsod.
It's called sinsod.
Okay. So you did that?
I did not do that because it was not expected. And I felt that was kind of like strange, you know, to do something like that. Plus, I wasn't loaded. So, you know.
Did you talk about it with her?
The mother never mentioned it.
Mm.
Because my wife and I, we had discussed it, you know.
Mm.
We weren't going to do that, you know. So we didn't do that. The mother was fine with that. Her father, on the other hand, so far. Her father and mother were not living together. They were like separated for a long time. So he, how come you're here saying your husband didn't give me the money and respect? But he already has his own problems. He's like an issued person, you know. He has a lot of difficulties in his life.
But he felt disrespected because you didn't offer a dowry or a sinsod.
Yeah, but he's not a normal-minded person.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just his way of just trying to get some money, you know.
Does she have siblings? Maybe another sister?
She does. She does. She has a sister. And two brothers.
And did he perhaps get a dowry from one of his other daughter or the other daughter?
Well, first of all, none of my wife's brothers married into she has a daughter, but her daughter never married her sister, her mother's sister, mother daughter. She never so there's never been the opportunity for that to happen.
Mm, okay.
But I don't think they did. Maybe they did. I think Paul might have. I think he built a house for his wife at the time. But anyways, we're a Christian group, so we don't like this type of situation. So we didn't do it.
So marrying an American, maybe he thought it was a chance for a payday. And
sometimes it's like that, and it's often like that.
Yeah. Especially in northern Thailand, right?
Well, it's not normally young men, but older men that get cheated. Because older men, they're like, you know, I'm not long in this world, you know. I need someone to comfort me. I'm retired. I got money, you know. And so they just spend all the money and show off, you know. Because in Thailand, you know, especially in 2014 and earlier, you know, the money went a long ways, U.S. dollar. Like, I think back then it was like 36 baht to the dollar.
Now it's 30.
Now it's 30, which is a big difference, you know. So, but that's another thing too. They cost, a lot of foreigners cause a lot of problems because of their money, you know.
Well, I've experienced that because I started coming to Thailand in 2014, and I was told that Phadangs come here. Am I saying it right?
Phadangs
come here, which is the white Westerner.
Phadang, yeah.
They come here, and they throw their money around, which raises the price of everything.
Well, actually, not that. The Chinese, incoming of the Chinese coming to Thailand causes the prices to go up. Because imagine a million people coming to a small country. You know, no matter, you know, what country it is, you keep bringing a big influx of people, you know, constantly coming in your country as tourists, the money's going to come, you know.
And things are so inexpensive here, and they're so sincere with their thank you. It makes you want to give them more. The first time I ever ordered room service here, it was a full breakfast of eggs and ham and croissant and beans and rice and everything you could want in a breakfast with coffee and orange juice. And it was $4.32 for room service. And so I handed her $6 in baht equivalent. And she was so grateful. I wanted to give her more money. And then I thought, here I am doing what I don't want people to do, which is raise the cost of everything by throwing their money around. But you almost can't help it because they're so grateful for what you give them. And I'm experiencing that here now, although I have noticed the prices of things have increased. For example, we had a cleaning lady come here the other day, and it was 400 baht. That's $12. So it's easy to see how people could throw money around.
But one thing you have to keep in mind is that when the cost goes up, the salaries for the Thai people don't go up.
Is that why massages have stayed the same price? Because I've noticed there is no inflation from 2014 for the price of massages. They are about 200 to 300 baht, which is $6.50 to $9.
It's possible that the massage person who's working there is like a contractor and they get all the money, maybe. For their chair, possibly.
Well, one thing I noticed is that there's a massage place about every third shop, and sometimes you'll go in there and there'll be nobody there, so they'll get on the phone and they'll just call someone from a shop next door. So that's common. One thing I'm curious about, as you entered your late 30s, early 40s, and you had not yet been married, did you consider marrying someone who wasn't American versus marrying someone who was American?
To be truthful, when you talk about American, are we talking about American Caucasian? Or are we talking about, because even like there's American Thais, there's American Chinese, there's American Korean, Japanese, African American. So in America, they do have Asians, you know, and Asian was not my fetish, but I was more attracted to an Asian woman than a non-Asian woman, let's say.
And by not your fetish, you mean your fetish?
Well, I mean, because I don't go, like...
I'm just kidding.
Go crazy over it, you know, some people do.
Well, I know that there are a lot of single men who are disgruntled with the American female now because of the wave of feminism that has swept through America. So it wouldn't matter the hyphen, whether they're Asian American or Latina American. I'm just talking about the American values that have been instilled in them from a young age that makes them a little bit different, makes them a little more, let's say, aggressive or masculine or aloof and detached or arrogant and those sorts of things. And maybe that's unfair. I don't want to blanket all of them, but I mean, I could say equally negative things about the American male and myself. So anyway, sometimes it's warranted. I know a lot of men are seeking marriage elsewhere.
I think what men look for first, because men are stupid, right, is we look for looks. Is she pretty? Like, you're driving the car, you get distracted because a pretty girl walks down the street. That's what distracts you, you know. Hopefully that's not what makes you marry them, but, you know, it definitely is a distraction. And
initially, it's what attracts you to them, at least.
Yeah, usually the when you're attracted to someone, so a lot, people come to Thailand for different reasons, obviously. You know, like, people go to Thailand to be an entrepreneur, or even low overhead, right? This is what we're referring, though, to the women, you know, obviously, finding a woman, but people come to Thailand for low cost. Some come to Thailand to play around with women. Some come to Thailand to meet a woman that would probably love them that no other woman in the world would love them, right? Because they're just too broken. So for me, I just came to Thailand because my wife was in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
That's where she was.
So let's get back to that. You get engaged, and then what happens from there?
So we agreed that we would not get married for 1 year. So as we were going on there, going toward the airport, my wife said, please don't cry at all. So I didn't cry for a year. I didn't cry for a year. And I went back home, and I worked hard, and I saved money, and I started putting money in the bank. And then in about 5 months before I moved to Thailand, I rented a house for her to stay in. Not a big one, a small one.
Tell me about that decision to move to Thailand. At what point did you make that decision?
When I realized that it would not be easy for her to come to America yet. America is very strict on entry into America. And she had to have her paperwork in order, and it wasn't on order. So if we're going to be together, I don't want this long-distance relationship as a married couple. That's ridiculous for me. So I decided if I'm going to marry her, I'm going to move wherever she is. If she cannot come, I will go. So I went.
So you get engaged. You're living in America for a year. You said you rented her a house?
Yeah, I rented her a house. As a house.
Okay. So was that a one-bedroom, two-bedroom house? Is that something you planned?
Four-bedroom house. It was a townhouse a little bit outside the city in the May Rim area.
Okay. And is it a house that you plan to share with her once you moved here?
Yes.
Do you mind me asking what you paid for that house?
6,500 baht.
6,500 baht is roughly...
nothing. $300?
$300. You owned the house?
No, rent.
Okay, you rented the house. Okay. Wow, $300 a month.
Yeah.
So you could easily afford that making a salary as a software architect?
Software architect, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay, so you're putting aside money. About a year later, after getting engaged, you decide that you're going to... Did you sell all your possessions in America, or did you get a storage unit?
Yeah, I sold my car. I didn't have too much.
Okay.
Because while we were engaged, I started, like, simplifying my life. Like, before, I lived in a five-bedroom apartment, you know, with a bunch of roommates right next to Fullerton State University, and living the life, you know, living nice, air conditioner 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not having to pay it, you know, and eating nice food, living a simple life, you know.
And did you talk with her every day?
No, so before I got engaged with her, I was living the high life. Spending a lot of money, eating steak, eating sushi, but once I got married with her, I moved into a small $700 room in a house, and I lived very simply after that, in order to prepare myself for a new life.
That sounds like something I would do. So you moved here and continued to live simply?
At first, we lived in a small house for 6,500 baht a month. What's interesting about Thailand, you guys who don't know, is that Thailand is very slow in the daytime, but at nighttime it wakes up. Like, it's like they're sleeping all day, and then at nighttime everything wakes up. All the stores open up, lights are everywhere, you know, there's action all over the place. And it happens till like at least 12 o'clock at night.
Hmm. partake in the nightlife a little bit, you and your wife?
If you're talking about bar scene, I don't do that. We go to, the malls, restaurants.
It's funny you mentioned she was humble. So men get married hoping women won't change, and they do. And, of course, women get married hoping that men will change, and they don't. It's a common theme. So how was your employer about you moving out of the country? Did you keep that same job?
Yeah. He changed the money he gives me. I had all the benefits and everything like that in America, but moving to Thailand, no benefits.
Okay, so they cut your health insurance?
Mm-hmm.
And how does vacation time work?
No vacation time.
No vacation time.
I was no longer an employee. I was a contractor.
Oh, you became a contractor. Did that boost your hourly pay, or did they adjust your pay for the cost of living in Thailand?
I lost about maybe $600.
A month?
Yep.
That's not too bad.
I mean, to me, it's not that good either.
Yeah. And what was their rationale?
The bosses, they're always about making money. And any opportunity they can cut the cost, they say, this is what it is. If you don't like it, don't work for me. That's how they are. So they had to adjust for me, too, because now I'm in Thailand, It was not easy because do I talk to him in his morning or my late nights? Yeah. So often I have to talk to him late at night because it's for his convenience, his relaxation, his easier life. So I was all right. I mean, I was already like a night owl, so it was okay. Probably even more of a night owl than before.
So what do you do for health insurance now?
Cash.
Oh, you pay all cash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that comes out cheaper than getting like an international plan through Cigna or somebody like that.
I never looked into it, but I'm sure it's cheaper. Yeah, we don't have that health plan like Thai people have, which is like the 30 baht plan, where they go to the hospital, pay 30 baht, and get coverage services. So it's pretty nice, but they have to wait really, 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 really long because a lot of Thai people go to the hospital to get checked. So I go to Lana Hospital right over here off of the freeway, and it's great. I mean, it doesn't cost me that much, and I have to go every 90 days or so because I have a thyroid problem, and I'm okay with it, and not too long of a wait, so I'm okay with it.
And the services are good?
Services are good. My wife had a baby there as well. It was really great because we basically have to go first every month, and then every 2 weeks, and then every week up to the delivery of the child.
And she was covered by the nationalized healthcare or the 30 baht program?
She was covered by the Frank Endowment.
So she paid cash also?
I pay cash. I pay for everything.
Do you mind me asking how much it cost throughout the pregnancy for 9 months and then thereafter, roughly?
The delivery was like 20-something thousand.
Wow. Dollars or baht?
Baht. Okay. But the whole thing, I would say, including all her food, is about 80,000. Yeah, 80,000 baht.
Okay. 80,000 baht is about $260, roughly. I'm sorry. 80,000 baht.
Yeah, it's cheap. I think in America, it's like
$2,600. Sorry.
It's cheap. Like in Thailand, maybe it's cost.
Decimal in the wrong place.
In Thailand, I mean, in America, it costs you like $20,000 to the baby.
Yeah, so about 10% of the cost to do it here.
Super cheap.
So, and it wouldn't matter if you were Thai or if you were American, right? Because you didn't use the Thai nationalized healthcare.
No, I think a lot of Thai people are insured here. So it's like almost like everyone is insured unless they're very, 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 very poor. But they probably still got the 30 baht insurance. But it can still cost money. Like, some Thai people, they want to get married in a nice, I mean married, they want to have a baby in a nice hospital, like Bangkok Hospital. That costs like 150,000 baht.
Mm. What about your baby being an American citizen? Is that possible? Would that be easily done?
He is an American citizen.
Oh, why is that? Because you're American?
Yes. Because America says so.
Okay.
It's based on the policy of your country. So our policy of our country is if you're born, you have an American father, and or American mother, You're born, you know, no matter where you're born, you're an American citizen. That's our policy. But because it's Thailand, because his mom is Thai, he's also a Thai citizen. Now,
Outside of cost, what is the most appealing thing about living in Thailand, you think?
Simplicity.
You think that stems from the Buddhist nature of their culture?
I don't mean people being simple. I mean life is simple. It's easy. For me, I have a lot of opinion about people in Thailand, but I don't want to share that. It's a different mindset here, you know. Most people probably in Thailand originally were farmers, right? Most just farmers, so very simple people, very simple life, you know. So when the Western world approached upon Thailand and Chinese and changing things up a little bit, bringing in business, you know, it changed a lot of things for people, you know. I think before people were simple-minded, and then after that they became needy.
More materialistic,
in
maybe?
Want, and even not only in want, but entitled.
Entitled, maybe greedy.
Entitled, meaning that everything should be for me.
Mm.
So even their drive is like that. I'm driving the car, I turn right, I turn left, that's all mine. They don't care all the time about, okay, the person coming on the other side of the road is already there. I don't care. I want to go there.
Mm.
And if that person doesn't stop, they may have an accident. That's kind of surprised me. In America, we have that sometimes too, but we also have something called police that would just like arrest those people. Thailand is not such a police system to enforce those kind of situations.
So it must be nice still. I know you took a $600 a month pay cut, but you're being paid in American dollars and you get to live here.
I make my own hours. That's the biggest difference than living in America. I mean, I literally make my own hours, so I work when I want to work. Of course, I have a standard, so I work more hours than if I was in America. But I have a standard, you know, where I will not allow myself to be lazy, even though I'm in a place where no one's watching me. I cannot accept that.
I'm the same way. How would you characterize the way that you approach your life and work?
I know that I am a father, husband, and so an employee or a contractor. So I have responsibilities, and I have to keep those responsibilities no matter where I am. And I'm always thinking about what happens if tomorrow I don't have my job, you know. So I got to work hard to keep the boss happy so that, you know, I can keep supporting my family. That's a big deal to me, you know. I don't want to – my father was not that way. My mother was not that way. My mother and father were not, you know, responsible people, but very irresponsible people. So that probably instilled in me the desire to not be irresponsible by default, you know.
I call them anti-role models. They can be powerful. Those who demonstrate by their way of being how not to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced a lot of that and learned a lot from people just by their negative examples. I know that you work hard. I see you just about every time I go into Starbucks, and you've got your two screens set up. Is that
yes.
Is that where you work every day? We met at Starbucks. Is that where you
work? Yeah, that's where I work almost every day.
Has there been a prevalence of Starbucks in Chiang Mai? Have you noticed them sprouting up everywhere in the last few years?
Well, I know that Starbucks is a profitable business in Thailand because people want to feel posh, you know.
Mm.
So they go there to like, I'm drinking Starbucks. And then this particular Starbucks that you met me at, it's the most posh because it has the beer-like type of, you know, coffee, you know, from the drum, you know, with the foam. And, you know, they have ice cream in your coffee, like some kind of special, like, high-end, you know, coffee drink like you might have in Milan or something like that. So people have that. They're attracted to that, you know. So, you know, when we at, I'm not going to tell you where it is because I don't want you to go there too, because there's a little bit of spots left. But It's good.
Yeah, I like working there too. And it is kind of built in the mold of Thai culture, the way the wood is. And yeah, you're right. They have a separate bar where you can get a French press, for example, which I've not seen anywhere else in the world. And I try to visit Starbucks everywhere I go. If you wanted a reason, and I don't recommend investing in individual stocks, but one of the things that I've noticed recently, which would be reason to invest, I went to Prague first in 2015 for my 35th birthday. Since then, there have been, well, even in the last year, there have been 15 new Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And Prague isn't that big of a place. It's not that big of a city. And the average wage there happens to be the same that it is here, which is about $800 US a month. Mm-hmm. And do you know, just as it is here, when you walk into Starbucks there, it's hard to find a place to sit,
mm-hmm.
which is astounding to me. Because the average wage is $800 a month, yet they're spending $5 on a cup of coffee, which tells me that people will spend money regardless of their income or what percentage of their income they might be spending every month on coffee, because most people don't pay attention to how much they're spending anyway. So my question for you, somewhat related, how much money do you spend every day at Starbucks? Do you buy a coffee every time you go?
Well, at first I used to drink, you know, like a iced mocha, which I really loved. But what I'm finding as I've been living in Thailand for now almost 5 years is that I cannot drink milk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to cut out the milk.
You're lactose intolerant?
I'm becoming lactose intolerant. Yeah, not by choice.
You think that has something to do with their milk here?
It has to do with milk.
Just milk in general?
Milk has, you know, the lactate inside the milk. Causes me to my body not having the enzyme to break down the lactate, you know, causes me to have stomach irritation.
Is that an age thing?
It is an age thing. Yeah.
Shit, I gotta watch out for that.
Yes. And I also have other belly issues with Thailand. I mean, I got food poisoning before, and I was in the hospital for a week, and so it kind of probably messed up my belly a little bit,
because
you know we have good bacteria and bad bacteria in the belly. So the good bacteria is good for fighting out bad bacteria. So when you don't have much good bacteria left, you get a lot of stomach problems. So
I eat a lot of yogurt and drink a lot of kombucha for that reason, to try to get the healthy gut.
I eat the yogurt, but I don't eat the kombucha.
That's a drink.
It's too sour for me.
They have some honey ginger lemon at this salad place right here. I have some if you want to try. It's really good. Do you live on a budget?
My wife likes to calculate a budget.
Oh, that's good.
What I do, to answer your question from earlier, though, I drink an iced Americano.
Okay.
I bought my own Starbucks cup for 1,200 baht, and I fill it up, get 10 baht off. So I only pay 95 baht for a cup of iced Americano. So my budget is like 95 baht a day for coffee, and then I splurge on going out to eat sometimes, like Indian food or something local nearby.
We found that oftentimes it's cheaper to eat out than it is to cook at home.
Yes, sometimes, but it's not always.
Right.
And the problem you'll find that if you live in Thailand long enough is that you're going to get stomach issues, especially no matter who you are, you're going to get food poisoning eventually, especially if you're eating on the vendors in the street. For those who know, yes, vendors are cheaper. You can pay 35 baht to 40 baht for the food, but you don't know how they prepare the food before, and it's also sometimes when it's hot outside and that meat's sitting in the heat, I'm sure some bacteria is growing on that. So you eat that food too often. You know, more often you eat that kind of food, you're going to have more stomach issues. Everybody has stomach issues. Even Thai people have stomach issues with the food here sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you mix the problem with spicy along with some bacteria in your food, and you're going to have belly issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to stay away from the street food if you can, even though it will save you money.
Yeah, we've been getting for breakfast probably 3 days a week. There's a vendor right outside of here, and he makes an omelet with rice and has this awesome spicy sauce that he gives you a little bag of, and I love it. And it's so cheap and so easy. So this omelet with rice is 25 baht, which is about, what, 83 cents. I mean, it's so inexpensive, yeah. And then I did buy a coffee maker from Tesco. Tesco is like the...
Tesco Lotus?
Yeah, Tesco Lotus is like a mini Walmart. And that coffee maker was only $10. So
yeah, it's cheap.
People are curious how much it would cost to move to a place like this and live comfortably.
Comfortably, okay. About $1,500 a month.
$1,500 a month here, yeah. You could live comfortably. And that's with a one-bedroom apartment. Is that having a car?
Well, I mean, a car is expensive in Thailand. You're talking about buying a car.
Okay, so how do you get around?
No. You can use Grab, or you can take the red truck, or you can walk. They also have a public bus that has, like, a schedule that you can go on.
How do you get to Starbucks in the morning?
Me, I drive my truck.
Okay, so you do have a truck.
Did
you,
I do, yes.
Did you pay cash for it, or do you pay for it monthly?
I pay for it monthly.
Okay. And what year is the truck?
It's a 2019.
2019 truck.
Yeah.
So it was brand new. How much is your monthly payment?
The original payment is original cost is 1.7 million.
Baht.
Baht. Our down payment was 300,000 baht. And then we pay 48,000 baht a month for 2 years.
Okay. So 1.7 million baht is about $56,000.
It's expensive.
How much did you say your monthly payment was on the truck?
48,000.
And so are you able to save some money?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a retirement plan, or how are you saving?
We are saving based on our needs. So our need initially was in Thailand that we have to have 400,000 baht in the bank in order to have a spouse visa in Thailand. So we were adding up to that 400,000, putting that into a savings account.
You had to have 400,000 baht in the bank, which is about 13,000 U.S. dollars.
Mm-hmm. 13, 14,000.
And sorry, your car payment you said was
48,000.
Okay, so that is about $1,600 a month.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a really nice truck.
It is. I'll show it to you afterwards.
Okay, so you've got $1,600 a month car payment. You've got your house payment is about $600, so about $1,000 less.
Soon, yeah.
So there you spent $2,200. You probably spend maybe $500 on food. Okay, and then so you're making an American salary, which I imagine is almost six figures. I mean, it's really solid,
it's
right?
It's close to that.
Yeah. So you're still able to save money. How do you go about saving it? Do you save it in an American Vanguard or Fidelity type company? Or
I am not a wise investor, so I just keep it in the bank.
Okay, yeah. In a savings account. Okay. Do you ever consider moving back to the States?
No.
Never. So you're in Thailand for good.
I mean, the America that I left is not the America I would return to. It's changed so much. There's so much me, and so much, especially because of Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram, it's caused people to be so self-centered, right? So self-centered. So you can't even blame, like in Thailand, I guess, the people who are self-centered here. It's because everyone's becoming more self-centered. This is all about me. That's what we call a selfie. Self-centered photo, you know? But I don't like that attitude. I don't consider myself to be self-centered, you know? I'm not the most important thing. Right now, my son is the most important thing. And my wife is second, and then I'm third. Although my wife would say that she thinks that I think that I'm the most important. Ask her who gets all the money, who gets all the tell her off how often do I go buy myself this and go buy myself that. It's very rare.
I'll ask you some fun, quick questions,
okay.
And then we'll wrap up. So do you have a favorite book?
My favorite book is the Bible, so just let you guys know I'm a Christian. It is my favorite book. I can mention a person that I can recommend you listen to, Gary V.
Gary Vaynerchuk.
This man is a person who put his money where his mouth is. He's someone that who is a celebrity not by choice but by accident. He is someone that just has the work ethic and the entrepreneur attitude since he was a teenager, even before a teenager. And he's also got more than a $4 million company. You know, and more than one company, he's got the Vayner Media company, He's got I think it's an entrepreneur like thing he's doing, where he's helping small businesses to become successful. And he just branched out to England. So this guy is like, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's on fire right now. What I'm inspired now to do most is to provide value to others. And I am also a fan of the Bible. And when I pray, I ask God to shine through me. You know, just allow me to be a conduit to provide value to other people. Mm-hmm. And Gary Vee is all about that. He's one of the things I like most about Gary Vee is he's unapologetically himself. He's genuine and authentic, but he's also high on self-awareness. And for those who are not self-aware, just the concept will hopefully get people thinking about it and studying it. One of my favorite books on self-awareness is in this stack here, and I can't turn it around because the microphone is sitting on it, but it's called Awareness by Anthony DeMello. Mm. It was written in the 80s. All of the principles are just as applicable today. Next question. Have you heard people in Thailand talk about Donald Trump?
Yes.
They talk about him a lot?
Thai people or foreigners?
Well, I know foreigners do because I hear his name said just as much as like. Like, how do I know that I hear Americans? I can hear like said a lot, and I hear Donald Trump's name said a lot.
I just think people laugh.
So Thai people are just laughing?
Just laugh, yeah. Okay. This guy's a little bit crazy. But, you know, the thing is, we don't know these people. You know, we don't know. Everything is a performance, but that doesn't mean that they don't have a strategic performance, you know. So, yes, people talk about Donald Trump. I tell them I have no opinion, so.
That's probably wise. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self who just graduated from high school?
Don't worry about the future. Just work really hard. Don't be lazy, and don't spend so much money. Don't spend so much care on the latest gadgets and the latest technology. Just study hard and learn hard and try to adapt to what's going on around you. Like, for technical people who want to do programming development, learn like C programming, learn PHP, learn Python, learn MySQL, learn SQL, learn all the stuff, JavaScript, learn all. Just learn it. And don't say, I now know enough. Because you never know enough. Because today's technology is going to be gone, and there'll be tomorrow's technology. So a good, smart person is someone who never thinks he knows everything and is always willing to learn something new. That's what I tell myself. Dummy, be open. Keep learning.
That is great advice. Because so much of what you said comes with age. And you didn't know this stuff at 18. But as you get older, you learn the value of hard work. You begin to care less what other people think. You know through experience that the grass isn't greener on the other side.
Yeah.
It's green where you water it. It's important to save money and not spend it on stupid stuff, which is sort of tied to caring less what other people think.
Yeah.
If you're spending money to impress people that don't care about you, you're wasting your money. You're wasting your life. You've restricted your freedom, right? Because you're going to be dependent on your boss more. You'll have less room in negotiating your salary because you're dependent on your income. You need to get out of debt as soon as you can because money compounds and you can't allow the compounding process to take root until you get rid of your debt and you're on the positive side of your net worth ledger, let's call it. And I love what you said about learning, because learning compounds the same way that money does.
Yeah.
Everything you learn can be connected to other concepts that you've learned.
Yes.
If someone dropped $1 million in your lap tomorrow, what would you do with it?
I'd be scared.
Why is that? Because of the, you said that that's one thing that you really haven't learned is how to manage money properly. Is that why?
No, because someone just gives something to me without me earning it. It's like, I'm not going to have any pride in it. And so if someone just gives you something, what valuable lesson are you getting from that? I mean, that just basically jumps over a bunch of lessons that you would not ever receive because you got that money. And also, if you are bad at $10, you're going to be bad at $1 million.
That's exactly right. That's why lottery winners go broke often. But I've never had anybody answer the question that way, which is really interesting.
I would pay all my debts, that's for sure. If I had $1 million, I'd pay all my debts.
How much debt do you have total, you think?
About $15,000.
That's not bad.
Dollars. Yeah, but the thing is, okay, guys, just forget the credit cards, man. Anything. Just be happy with what you got, you know? And then work hard if you want something more. And then you'll be happy that you did it because you'll feel like, okay, I have done this, and that's why I have this. So,
is that how you justified paying such a high price for a car because you worked so hard?
Me? I bought the car because we needed a car. In Thailand, all cars are expensive. Mm. In America, we don't pay import tax. Mm. But Thailand, they pay import tax. It's a small price to pay, actually, for reliability, for safety, you know. I don't have any crazy reason why I bought it.
If you could go to the moon, but you had to be gone for 6 months and it would double the amount of debt that you have now, mm-hmm. would you go?
No.
Why not?
Because debt is like a dung hole, man. You have to climb out of it. You know, why go somewhere just to get in a dung hole? You know, how about just like avoid the dung hole altogether? You know?
So if space travel gets a lot better and more convenient, that you don't have any desire to maybe see Earth from outer space?
Not really. I mean, I'm a simple person. Like, I'm happy with simple situations. That's another important thing to do, is to be simple. The more simple you are, it doesn't mean be stupid. Be simple means don't expect so much. My wife thinks that I'm not simple. But I'm pretty simple compared to when I was living in America.
Would it be okay if somebody had a question about living in Thailand or connect with you about maybe finding a job that they could work remotely and they just wanted to connect with someone?
Sure. They can connect with me.
Cool. How can they find you?
I have a domain name, which is hard to, unless I spell it out for it. D as in Delta, Z as in Zebra, I as in Internet, N. E-E, Eagle, R as in Ralph, designyear.com. And my email is frank@designyear.com. And that word, that name came from that I love design and I love engineering. So I combined them together and I made the first designyear. Yeah.
Spell that again.
D-Z-I-N-E-E-R.com. Designyear.
Got it. All right, Frank, this was really enjoyable, dude. Yeah. That was some serious insight on living in Thailand, and I'm glad to have met you and glad to have a new friend in Thailand, man. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
All right. Awesome. Friends, thank you for listening. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here and hearing his story, and I never take it lightly that you've chosen to spend your time with us, so thank you. Oh, I've been sending gifts from Thailand to those who interact with me on the blog or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. So if you like getting surprises in the mail, leave a review on Apple, send it to me or Lady Overseas, and we'll send you something. Also, if you wish to follow my adventures on Twitter and Instagram, I am @man_overseas. Thank you, folks.